Hello everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of the Dream On podcast. I'm your host, Jen, and thank you all so much for joining me today on this beautiful day, but also we are approaching the end of season 3, which is really exciting. There have already been 3 seasons of this podcast, and I think that they just keep getting better. So it's been great so far, and in celebration of that and in celebration of the fact that we are approaching the end of this season, I thought that it would be fun to look once again at our listener analytics and see where everybody's coming from, because we are a very global podcast here. So currently 47% of the listeners are in the United States, and most of you guys are in California, 14% of you are in California. Then we have 8% in Texas, 5% in Washington, and then we have a ton on the East Coast from just like assorted different states. So lots of US listeners. Hello, everyone. You're not probably very far away from me if you're in California, because our population is pretty concentrated in a few areas. Moving on, we have 7% of the listeners from the UK, from various locations, 7% from Canada, my neighbors up north, and 6% in Germany. So Germany has officially fallen back. The UK has preceded them. They are now in front. And behind Germany, we have Australia and then the Netherlands, which are both tied for 4% of the listeners. India has been sitting at 2% for quite some time, and then after them, we have, like, a lot of other different places. So many other, like, different places that are all at, like, 1%. So there's probably, like, 2 people listening. Thank you to all those people, the random, like, 2 listeners from all these different countries. I love reviewing, like, the listener analytics. I just think it's super fun because everyone's from, like, so many different places, and we're all listening because we're all interested in lucid dreaming. It's a very unifying topic because it's exactly the same no matter where you go. So it's just one of those things that we can all relate to, like, cross-culturally and everything. It's very cool. So moving on into the episode. Before I get to it, I just want to say that after this season of the podcast, I'm starting a new project that's not lucid dreaming related, so it's totally different. But if you enjoy what I have to say generally, you will like it. I'm doing a little project with my sister, and I think it's going to be super fun, but I don't want to announce anything yet because we're still getting stuff together. But I will, like, announce it on this podcast because obviously that's going to take up some of my time as well. So it's like this podcast, while I'm on the break between this season and the next season, I'll be working on the other thing, and then I'll get it out. But anyway, it's very exciting, so look forward to that. I'll announce it on here very soon. Also, you guys probably saw, unfortunately, it's been like a super long time because I stopped doing everything for my finals, and I didn't work on the podcast. I didn't work on anything. I just did all my finals. I had to write like couple papers. It was like a whole thing. But anyway, I went a couple weeks ago to the Lizzie McAlpine concert in Oakland. Oh my gosh, guys, she was so freaking good. Like, she sounded exactly like her album. She was exactly the same. She was so good. Like, her voice on the tracks is not edited at all. That's just like her. There's no auto-tune or anything. She's just amazing. And I really loved going to see her. And I know that I will probably never get to see her again because now she's really big and really popular. And when I was listening to her, I think 3 years ago was when I started listening to her, like around there, she was still like a relatively small new artist. And then she even was like before that as well earlier this year. But then I think it was like February or March that her song Ceilings took over TikTok. So now people are like, oh, like Ceilings girl. And it's like, no, you guys aren't real Lizzie fans, okay? Over the Ocean Call is everything. Not Over the Ocean Call, Andrew. Over the Ocean Call. Like, oh, come on, guys. It's so freaking good. Also, Orange Show Speedway, come on. Like, go and listen to her album right now. 5 Seconds Flat, Lizzie McAlpine. It's so good. But I loved seeing her live. It was so good. I posted a couple pictures to my story, and I also asked for like Q&A questions. So some of you probably saw that, and it was really fun. It was awesome. Now that I've talked about all the exciting stuff that's like coming up and also the thing that already happened, I need to get into like kind of this episode, which is going to be a bit of an odd episode. This is like one of the first times where I'm like, what do I name the episode? Because normally in my show notes, just for myself, not like the description for you guys, like in my notes, I normally already have the title of the episode figured out because it helps me kind of know where I'm going to go with it. But this one's interesting because I have a couple different topics that I want to cover that are related, but they're not like super interconnected. So we're just going to roll with it. We're going to go with it. And I think it's going to all work out. And I'll name the episode when I'm done. So without further ado, let's freaking get started. So the very first thing that I want to talk about during this episode is the phenomenon of false memories. And for those of you who have been listening to the podcast for a while or who have lucid dreaming experience, this is probably a topic that you have some familiarity with, but I want to explore it in detail because I think that it's something that you overlook when you're dreaming, and it's something that you'll even have experience with if you are just normally dreaming, not necessarily lucid dreaming. It's just that when you're in a lucid dream, it becomes a little more relevant to you because it's something that stands in the way of becoming lucid and maintaining your lucidity. Thankfully, it's not like too difficult to like break through once you're already lucid, but it is one of those things that kind of stands at the gate as like a guard, keeping you from becoming lucid. So false memories, it's easier to just give like examples to explain what they are, even though it's relatively self-explanatory. The kinds of false memories that I'm talking about in dreams are where you're in a dream and you're talking to someone who is like a member of your family, or you're talking to someone who is your friend. But then after you wake up in the morning, you're like, yeah, that was not my brother. That was not my friend. And it was just like a random person that the dream spawned in to play that role in the play or the movie of your dream. So it's just like a totally random person, but for the purposes of the dream, they're playing a character and they're interacting with you in a certain way. And just a part of how dreams function is that we take these kinds of things at face value, and when someone comes up to us and in our mind we're like, oh, that's my brother, we just blindly accept that. And so then for the rest of the dream sequence wherein your brother is present, even though they're not actually your brother, you don't really take any time to think about that fact, because in the dream you're busy doing whatever, you're busy doing other stuff, or you're just like listening to what he has to say. And so you're not really actually absorbing information actively. You're just kind of taking things at face value and you're accepting them. And this can also apply to places like your home or your workplace. And once again, in real life, you wake up and you're like, that was not my house, that was not my friend's house. Like, you know, and this is something that's extremely common, right? This is something that's probably very familiar to you, even if you only remember a couple of the dreams you've ever had in your life. Like, this is just a part of kind of the basic makeup of dreams. It's something to how they're structured. And it's important to recognize in this moment that because this is something that's so common, it's extremely easy to overlook, and it's extremely easy to not realize what dreams would be like if we didn't have this sort of implied knowledge. Like, think back to even the dream you had last night and like the dream you had last week, like the really crazy one, and think about what that would have been like if you didn't have the kind of implied knowledge that you have in dreams. Like, you would just spawn into a location that you've never been before, and you would instantly be lucid if you didn't have that kind of knowledge. Because otherwise you'd be like, wait, why am I here? Like, who are these people? And someone would come up and be like talking to you, you know, they'd call you sis or whatever, like a freaking Disney Channel brother. And you'd be like, yeah, like, this is not Disney Channel, and this is a dream, because I'm not an actor, and this is not happening right now. So it just that kind of thing, like, it really, you take it for granted as just, like, something that happens in dreams, and it's important to realize that if it wasn't there, every single dream would be a lucid dream, because without this sort of mental block happening, you would be able to instantly recognize every single time, like, oh, this is not realistic. Like, what's happening right now is not happening. How did I get here? Like, who are you people? It's just, it takes the dream out of the kind of absurd world that it's in, and it takes it into a more logical, realistic context. And that would also mean that all of these really like crazy, insane nightmares and stuff that people have. Like, it wouldn't even be a nightmare anymore because you'd just instantly be like, oh, this isn't real. And you wouldn't be scared, no matter what the context was, because you would just be taken straight back down to reality every single time. So this is a huge obstacle, and it's something that you need to confront when you're trying to lucid dream. And this is actually the main reason that you do reality checks. Even though it's not explicitly said, the reality check method of lucid dreaming is specifically tailored to fighting this dream phenomena. And it's something that is not explicitly said, even though that's exactly what you're doing. So when you are doing a reality check, you are in real life checking to see, oh, is this a dream? And the idea is, even if you know that, you know, you are really awake, like, you know that for sure, you're still supposed to be doing these kinds of reality checks so that then this will build a habit. And this is all in the hopes that at some point you'll be in a dream and on kind of autopilot, you'll do a reality check. The reality check will fail and then you'll be like, oh, I'm in a dream, and then you'll be able to be lucid. So in terms of reality checks, as a quick review, there are lots of different kinds of reality checks. Some of the most popular ones include looking at a clock, looking at your hands, trying to push your arm through a wall or put your finger through the palm of your opposite hand. There are lots of physical reality checks like that. There are also some mental reality checks, which are my favorite because they are infallible and they don't ever fail. So my favorite ones that I normally do just kind of naturally, I'm like, how did I get here? Because in a dream, you don't have any previous memories of how you got to where you are. It's extremely unlikely that in the dream, you woke up in the morning and got in a car and went to where you are right now. Unless, of course, it's a false awakening dream, in which case it's probably not going to be very long anyway. And so becoming lucid is kind of worthless at this point. But just generally, yeah, I like to do those kinds of like mental questioning reality checks because they can't fail unless, of course, you're distracted. But the other ones, like putting your finger through your opposite palm or like pushing your hand through a wall, that can fail if you've done it too many times and you're starting to expect to hit the wall, because dreams are built solely on your expectations and emotions and imagination. And so because there's not actually a wall there, it just depends on if you believe your hand is going to hit the wall or not, because your hand is also not your hand. It's just your imagination. So everything's just built on expectation, so it can fail. But anyway, getting back to my other point, false memories are a natural part of all dreams. And most of us go through our dreams, through our dream life without questioning them. And we just accept them and we're like, ah, yes, this is how things are. And we don't think too hard. But some of us, everyone who lucid dreams, we learn, or at some point we just kind of figure out that it's actually important to question these kinds of things, because sometimes the things around us are not what they seem. And actually we have dreams that can look and feel exactly like real life, but actually they are not. It's totally fake. Everything is not real. So obviously there are some people who learn how to lucid dream, which is completely possible for everyone to do as long as you put in enough time and enough dedication and you really commit to it. It's totally possible for everyone. And there are some people who lucid dream naturally, which is not, I guess it's not possible for everyone because you have to learn it otherwise, but some people naturally lucid dream, including myself. And I saw this really fun thing online talking about like why some people might have a tendency to naturally lucid dream while others don't. And so I found a study on it and I reviewed it, and now I'm just going to talk about it in brief. And I know that that sounds really boring, but I promise you that it's very interesting. I'm not going into detail. Don't worry, it's going to be fun. So the whole study, I have like the name, and I'm going to link the study in the description of this episode. So the name of the study is Metacognitive Mechanisms Underlying Lucid Dreaming, and it's from 2015. So obviously I did not find it in 2015. I found it today. So for me, it's new, but the article itself is actually not new. It's a study that they did a while ago, but I'm just now finding it. So it's new to me and it's new to you guys. And in this study, they found that the very back of your prefrontal cortex, which for those of you who don't know, the prefrontal cortex, prefrontal, okay? So it's in the front of your brain. But right now we're talking about the back of the front of your brain. Like the back of the front of that section. That part of your brain, which is associated with planning of your future actions, taking initiative, and processing your working memory and attention, that part of your brain is found to be more dense and have more volume in people who lucid dream compared with people who don't. And in this study, they were not looking specifically at people who learned to lucid dream or people who naturally lucid dream. They had just like a random sample of people. So who knows if these people were people who learned or if they naturally did it. I'm sure that there was like a distribution of both of them within the study, but they didn't specify. That's not what they were looking at. They were just generally looking at people who lucid dream versus people who don't. And they were able to find in this study that in this particular region of the brain, this region of the brain was more developed in people who lucid dream compared with people who don't. So what does that mean? Well, thinking about what I just said, even though it was quite fast, so I'm going to say it again. This part of your brain, they think that it is responsible for executive functions. So those are like functions that you're acting on. You're actively doing something. This is a part of your brain where you're thinking about, you know, what am I going to do? You're planning things. You're taking initiative. You're like, I'm going to do this right now. And it's also a part of how your brain processes your working memory and your current attention. So it's really like a very active part of your brain. It's where you're thinking, you're doing things, you're planning for the future. It's a very like in the moment, action-oriented region of the brain. And this area of the brain is more developed and like denser than in people who lucid dream compared with people who don't. So this, okay, we can extrapolate from this that it probably means that people who lucid dream are more involved in planning and taking action and being and taking the initiative. And obviously, correlation does not equal causation, statistics students. So this means that it's not necessarily that this region of the brain is more developed before people start lucid dreaming. It doesn't mean that it's something you're born with. Maybe it's that people who lucid dream further develop this region of their brain through lucid dreaming. Or maybe that's true and some people are born with it more naturally developed than other people. Because that would make sense, right? Because everyone can lucid dream. But also there are some people who lucid dream from an extremely young age and they don't necessarily know why. So it would make sense that some people are just born with like a propensity to be more like questioning about things and a little more maybe like aware of their surroundings and just kind of their location in the universe, right? That would make sense that some people are just more prone to thinking about that and considering it. But obviously because everyone can lucid dream, it proves that we all have the potential to do that and to think in that way. And therefore, it would make sense that everyone is able to make these kinds of changes. And that also makes sense because we already know that like your brain is malleable. Like when you're thinking and learning, like you're always learning, you're always developing your brain and like you're making new connections and neural pathways and everything. So obviously it would make a lot of sense that people are able to like change things like that by developing their skills and learning to lucid dream or whatever it is that they're doing. Like the same thing happens when you're learning like a sport or something, your motor functions improve, right? So it's all kind of the same idea. And this was just exciting because I found this specific study, which again, I'm gonna link and you should seriously like look at it and read through it because it's really cool and it's not that long. And this is like one of the things that I've found that's actually like concrete and it's interesting and it's not just like stupid like stuff just kind of like extrapolated from other extrapolations. Like it's something that's real and concrete and they actually were looking at like brain imaging and stuff. So very cool, very interesting. And it relates back to what I was talking about earlier with like the false memories and everything in dreams, because this, like what they're saying about this region of the brain with the whole like planning your actions and processing things and like just your focus in general, it means that these people, while they're asleep, are they still maintain enough of these like abilities in order to reach that point of lucidity even while they're asleep. And this is like important to realize, because when you're asleep, all your brain functions are just like lower. And so obviously in REM sleep, because you're dreaming and like you're actively moving around in the dream or whatever, obviously your brain is more active in REM than it is in like most of the other areas of sleep, the other sleep cycle stages. But your brain is still not operating at like 100. You're not fully conscious. You're still unconscious. But this, like, just the fact that the brain is beefier in that area suggests that then, because it just has more power, period, even when you're on like low power mode, it should be functioning at a higher level compared with people who have it like less developed. So interesting. I could just like think about this forever, and I probably will for the next like 4 days. But more specifically, I wanted to give you guys like a word to associate this with. And the word is actually what inspired this research for me, because like I saw a post about this. I think it was like in the Reddit lucid dreaming area, but I don't know. Honestly, like I wouldn't recommend you get on there now. Like I liked it before, but I feel like it's gotten more toxic as time has gone on. And also people are always asking the dumbest questions. They're like, I'm a new lucid dreamer, how do I get started? Like, girl, read the guidelines at the top of the subreddit. Like, don't ask. I don't care. Also, I literally have a whole podcast dedicated, and there are like 20 other ones as well that tell you how to get started. I know that you don't want to keep a dream journal, but like, girl, you have to. So anyway, moving past that. Someone made a post and they were like, oh yeah, like, did you guys see that they're establishing a link between metacognition and lucid dreaming? And I'm like, metacognition? Like, I don't know what that means, but it sounds like a fake word. But it is a real word. I looked it up. And if I had taken 2 more seconds, I probably could have figured out what it means. But metacognition just means thinking about how you are thinking and learning. So it's like it's a very like introspective, like, oh, I'm learning about this. How am I learning about this? And so maybe you'll like structure your learning differently, or just like when you're studying, you'll study in a way so that you'll actually understand it. So yeah, it's kind of like about how, you know, we all have different learning styles. Some people really like podcasts and they learn a lot from them. And some people can't stand to be like listening to somebody talk for so long, because like they just get lost after 5 minutes, right? Because they can't focus. So, and other people, they also can't focus, but they need like more stimulation. So then they'll turn on a podcast while they're doing something else, which when I'm cleaning the house, I'm listening to podcasts. Off topic again, I'm running back. Don't worry. We're not going to veer too far. So metacognition, okay? Thinking about like, okay, I'm going to do this and here's how I'm going to do it. It's like you're actively taking part in your own learning and thinking process. So you know how you think, you know how you learn. And you kind of tailor your own experience to cater to that and to make sure that you're thinking and learning in the most efficient and best way that you can. And they have found that there are children who are more predisposed to being more metacognitioned than others. So some kids are just naturally more like, oh, I learn better this way, and then they do things that way. And some kids really are not aware of that and they don't take it into account, and so they don't tailor their learning in the same way. And they've also found that later in school, people with higher grades are normally people who are more aware of how they're learning and they're more metacognitioned. And obviously that's not true across the board, but it is extremely interesting. And the final thing that I want to talk about, which is also associated with all of this stuff and is associated with lucid dreaming, is people who score really high on the openness category in the OCEAN personality test. And I think I've talked about that on this show before, but if you've never taken the OCEAN personality test, you totally should, because within psychology, it's considered to be just like one of the best personality tests we have at the moment. I'm sure that in the future they'll develop better ones, because we've only just started studying psychology just generally as a field. But, I mean, it's been less than 100 years, so who knows where we're going to be soon with that. We're still in the infancy stages of that whole field. But, yeah, the ocean test, it's, like, all these different traits, like openness, I think neuroticism, just, like, you know, random stuff. And it's these five traits. And the whole thing is you get a score for each trait on its own, but it's a sliding scale. So it's like, oh, you score, you are 20%, oh gosh, I'm going to mess this up. So it's like you're in the 20th percentile for openness compared with everyone else who took this test. So then the idea is like 19% of people are less open than you. Everybody else is more open than you, just generally as like a sliding scale. So, and because of the sliding scale, because it just doesn't just put you in like an arbitrary category, it's considered to be more flexible and therefore more reflective of your actual personality compared to something else like Myers-Briggs, in which changing a single answer could give you a totally different personality type. And then, yeah, it's just different. It's better. It's better. So take the ocean test. But people who score higher on the openness factor in the ocean test are more likely to be people who are lucid dreamers, which makes sense because if you're more open to if you're more open to different like experiences and ideas and thinking in new different ways, it would make sense that either you are someone who lucid dreams and therefore that makes you a more open person because you have these kinds of interesting like new unique experiences, or you're someone who is open and therefore this allows you in the dream to have this kind of flexible thought process that allows you to be like, hold on, this isn't real, because that does take a lot of flexibility of mind. So who knows which one causes what? Like the other thing, it's probably either way, like maybe you lucid dream first or maybe you're more open first. It all really just depends on what your like it's not preconception. Oh my goodness. It's your tendencies. I don't know where I was going with pre. What your tendencies are prior to, you know, whichever one that comes after. So it's all very exciting. I like it all. And if you mix all of this together in the mixing bowl and you're looking down at what you get, essentially, if we combine all of these things, then it suggests that people who have higher self-awareness and general openness to experience are more likely to lucid dream, period. So who knows what comes first? Who knows which thing is impacting which other thing? But when you have these things together, it is more likely that the person will also be someone who lucid dreams, whether they learned it or whether it's natural or whatever. Those things are probably going to be found together. So this is so much fun. I'm so glad that people are doing research and actually looking at stuff, and I don't have to just like say things, you know what I mean? Like I can actually look up things and have like real data and everything. So like I said, I'm gonna link the study in the description of this episode so that you can all read it. Again, it's very short, it's very interesting, it's very good. You should check it out. And I think that that's all I have. There will be announcements soon for like the other project that I'm doing with my sister, and the season will also end soon. I'm not sure like quite how many episodes it's gonna be. It might be like one more, it might be three more, but it's gonna end on an even number, because if the season has an odd number of episodes, like ew, disgusting, unacceptable. So it'll be an even number. So I think that I'm just like gonna end the episode here. I think that that was a super fun discussion, and I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. Have a wonderful day, a wonderful evening, a wonderful afternoon, night, whenever it is, and dream on.